Several lifetimes ago, twice during meditation, I visited this experience. One was to understand, the second was to give comfort. It was a powerful emotion. I realized that feelings can transcend many lifetimes, which they may be. I sometimes find that I just need to allow for a follow this emotion, and it leads to sudden moments of clarification, sometimes new discovery. I wish to hear your words on this, Ajahn. Okay, I'll let you know your next lifetime. So you connect the next life, because I can answer the next life for a card. Yeah, sometimes you do get some memory coming up, some connection, and sometimes we can see if we can find out what it means. But a lot of times, yes, it may have some connection, but a lot of times it doesn't, and the connection should be very strange. One of my friends over in Perth, he, just because he had lots of spare time, he decided out of interest to learn hypnotherapy. To take his clients, to hypnotize them, and take them into past lives. But he's apparently very good at it. And so he's regressed many people. And one of the weirdest cases, he always tells me the weird cases. The ordinary cases are just the ordinary, weird ones, I'm not. First of all, he is a brother and sister who are having lots of problems together. And so he regressed his sister, first of all, into a previous life. And first of all, the sister had a scar, a birthmark on her neck. And when he regressed her to a previous life, she said she used to be a journalist in San Francisco. And she was a woman, and she was coming home from work late one evening. And all she remembers, this isn't exactly what it was some columns, some stone columns, out from behind one of those stone columns, a man jumped out and cut her throat and killed her. She remembered that. How she died in the previous life. Coming home from work, and this guy jumped out from behind the stone column and smashed his head. Wow. That's why she had a birthmark. When they regressed her brother, he said he remembered the past life, he wasn't a very good man. And the worst thing he ever did, he was hiding behind the stone column, and he jumped out and cut this woman's throat. So they got reborn together as brother and sister, the murderer and his victim. That's weird. They always have got something calm we've got to work out. Maybe work it out together this time, okay? So sometimes you really want to know who your brother was. You know. But anyway, sometimes you can do that. Amazing thing with hypnotherapy, the one which takes you into regression, is even if it's a past life or not. Sometimes you prove it and all the details are there. Sometimes it's just a memory you can't really know for sure. But it does seem to work. So you have some phobia like fear of flying or other problems, really sort of afraid of other people. You go back into past life and you have this experience of what happened to you before, and afterwards, whether you believe it was real or not, the phobia goes, disappears. So that's what I'm going to do. So, in your case, if you remember something from the past life which is emotionally very strong, great. Experience it, understand it, just let it come up, and then it vanishes, and whatever the problem was, it's solved, whether it's a real past memory or not. The five elements are earth, water, fire, wind, and consciousness. Five, usually four, or sometimes six. But you know, there's always inflation, and we have a one here and another one there. Earth and water combine to become mud. I thought you said mine, the same thing really. M-U-D or M-I-N-D. So many people's minds are like mud. But when fire becomes a hard, solidified mass, tell you what, all the solid things we see on this planet. Yeah? Wind causes movement, vibration, kinesis. How does life, plant animals, spring out from this? It doesn't spring out from it. Remember those elements, that was 25 centuries ago, the best they could understand science. There are some parts of Buddhism which actually should be let go of. What elements is one of them? So I know that some, especially Burmese, might say, oh, no, this is really true. As a physicist, it's just a baloney. You have to tell you what it is. Now they say, oh, no, like fire is heat. And sort of the biggest vibration, heat is vibration from the same elements. There's much more to that than just those things. So, four elements I just push aside. That's a part of Buddhism which was useful at the time, and it's much better stuff. When it comes to the nature of the mind, more than that is cutting edge. This other stuff is a bit common. And anyway, life has got nothing to do with stuff. With atoms or universes. Life is a separate stream of existence, mind. In fact, that life doesn't spring out of mud. Mud springs out of mind. Listen to some of these questions which are coming up. Now, what are they? Okay, they sprung up out of the mind. That's where it comes from. So mind is a forerunner of all things. It's a chief. I am drunk. I can feel the energy from human objects. Sometimes I can detect the energy in different shapes, strong or weak, purple, by open eyes or close eyes. After meditating, the sense of feeling, detect the energy from people or objects, or can sense it. What can I do by using the sense view of my life? Oh, sometimes that it's not really developing something like that, because if you can feel sort of the moods of other people, just where they're at, sometimes they can really depress you. Because most people are in one state. It's only a few people. Come on, okay. People are very pure, very high-minded, and happy. But you go to most places in this world, and you know, people are just really struggling to survive, to have happiness, and so many problems. But I know that some people do develop a sensitivity, and I have to try and train and teach them actually to cut that sensitivity off, at least to get some control of it, so you don't pull into the problems of other people. You're not pulled into the low energy, bad energy states. And otherwise people get very concerned, very depressed. Sometimes, and there's a nice article someone sent me on empathy. The dangers of empathy. Because apparently that this happens with many nurses, and many nurses here today. Sometimes you're with sick people struggling to survive, people in agony, pain, or just really feeling low. And when you try and empathize with them, actually they bring you down as well. So sometimes people in those professions are going to be very careful not to be too empathetic with the others. Otherwise their energy gets drained. So you've got to sort of sometimes put a barrier up. And say, yes, I'm going to be compassionate, but I'm also going to be compassionate to myself as well, to calm myself. Otherwise you just you get pulled down as well. But be careful. If you have empathy or some psychic empathy, how to control it is you make these resolutions. You train the mind, you tell the mind, right? Today I'm going to cut that off, I'm just going to be with myself. I'm not going to pick up other people's energies. However, if you're out and about some really great people, there you can pick up as much energy as you possibly can. Suck it out of them. This is life stuff. For the last 2 days I have been smelling a certain fragrance. It comes sporadically and I'm just curious if other participants have smelled the same thing. Are you all having a shower in the morning? How have you been brushing your teeth? It is a very beautiful smell. And it's not coming from the person sitting next to you. You can actually sit in another place. When they're not here, you don't smell it. Because sometimes it's just ordinary stuff. It's human being smell. But sometimes, as I said today, if you get really minty, meditation, very peaceful. If you can go to your toilet and look at the bars and go, wow, that is beautiful. And you also smell fragrances here. Could be your meditation taking off. Does the nose get stiff after some time? Well, the remedy. My nose is always stiff. It can't move, it can't bend backwards. My nose is pretty stiff because I've got a bone in the center of it. So I don't know what you mean about stiff, really stiff. It's sometimes that all sorts of perception gets, basically, the nose disappears, that's what it can do. The nose disappears, so actually, you can't feel the rest anymore. That's very, very good. Nose does all that. Because then, that's what happens with the body, it disappears into the body. Sometimes body getting stiff, yes, sometimes the whole body feels like so stiff and rigid. And that's usually just before the body disappears. Because you can't move it. It's just, you're letting it go, it's relaxing, it's just quite happy being like that. You just can't move it, it's getting very stiff, immobile, and then it vanishes. Always a good sign. I feel restless and can't start to meditate. When I try to get some sleep and I can't sleep, I feel tired and can't rest. Please tell me, should I continue to meditate? Yes. Sit in a chair and we'll get a straitjacket to make sure you can't move. We'll tie you in for an hour at a time and that will cure your restlessness. No. It's the restlessness because you want something. So find out what you want, and if you get it, will you be happy? No. So let go of all wanting. If you can't sleep, be happy not to sleep. Most people die when they're asleep. So you keep awake and live a little longer. The second thing, when do most people die? In bed. So if you don't go to bed, but you come down here to meditate, you walk, you don't lie down in bed, then again, more likely to live a long life. So in other words, don't worry so much. Ooh, I'm not going to sleep. If I can't sleep, I'm going to be really tired. I'm going to get sick. My brain's going to get depressed. I'm going to get this sickness and that disease. What's going to happen? It's not the sleep is not the problem. Well, not sleeping is not the problem, it's thinking. That's the problem. I think, think. Okay, now I'm thinking about thinking so much. So just shut up. So, it would be wonderful if you could use a hammer. Honk! And he has to sleep. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to do that these days. Anyhow, just see if you can just be in the present moment. Really be in the present moment. Don't even think of the next moment, let alone this evening. Right now, every moment. You can do that anytime, any place, whatever you're doing. Present moment awareness. As for the past, totally, let it go. Don't have anything to do with the past. Finish. Live life in the present. Lie. Not replays. Not just facing what's coming in the movie theater close to you next week. Have it right now. Right this moment. Present. Wow, I can smell those fragrances. Wow, it must be David. My meditation must be really, really good. Someone's cooking, torturing you. Where do thoughts come from? Thoughts come from Mars. What do you mean where they come from? They don't come from outer space. Thoughts are right there, and you go picking them out and bringing them into you. They're just like this huge filing cabinet, this huge database of possible thoughts, mostly memories, mostly rehashed stuff you've thought before. Very hard to think an original thought. It's all stuff. Freud's fantasies, plans for the future, which never ever happened. Anytime, if you're someone who has fears about the future, write it all down. What if fear is going to happen in 2017? And at this time next year, get out that list and see how many came true. And it will teach you just what a waste of time fear is. 99% of what you fear never happens. Never happens at all. What happens is usually something much worse. Just to be positive. No, it's not much worse. Totally different. So, where do real thoughts come from? From stupidity. That's where they come from. Because somebody asked me, they just in the lobby. Dependent origination. Dependent origination. Of course you teach dependent origination. From stupidity comes the mental formation, my thoughts. First stage, Awija Pachina Sankara. There we go. That's where the thoughts come from. Absolute stupidity. What do you think? 99% of thoughts are totally useless, rubbish, garbage, bad. That's bad. As soon as the thought comes up, that's bad. Do it. It's unsolicited garbage now. Thoughts. Do it. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you knew where that delete button was? The thought comes up, that's not interesting. Do it. Delete. Again, an interesting one. Look at it again. Actually, it's stupid. And have some silence for a change. That's where thoughts come from. Delusion. Please advise how to guarantee to become human being again in your next rebirth. Okay. For a big donation to the BGF, I will write out a guarantee. I will write it out and sign it personally. How much? Think we need for this one. Well, click the consent advice, and then I will sign a guarantee that you will be reborn in your next life. If you're not reborn in your next life, yes, sue me. You can't, you're not a human being. I'm perfectly safe. Whatever way I'm with. Of course! You know, you can't guarantee anything. Why do you want a guarantee for? You're so scared of the future. If you're a good person, kind person, peaceful person, you meditate and you keep your five precepts, where do you belong? You belong either in a heaven realm or a human realm. That's where you belong, that's where you fit. You're a nice, good person. If you act like a monkey, you get reborn in the jungle. It's obvious. So if you sleep too much, you can be born as a dog in somebody's house. I'm only joking, but just how you behave, you can actually see where you're fitting. So that's how to guarantee. Live like a human being. Be kind. Have humanity. You know that some people are vegetarians, they eat vegetables. Some people are humanitarians. They eat humans. Mind clear, body relaxed after a while, irritation and pain started. Mind for the pain, didn't get kind of was trying to accept it. But it interferes with the meditation all the time. What do you mean it interferes with the meditation? It is the meditation. It only interferes if you want something else. So, do you want to be with the breath? Do you want to be with the nerves? Do you want to be with the others? No, you be with your pain, your irritation. That's your meditation. So how to go on as this keeps persisting? Just stay with the pain. Then when you're content to be in the pain, with the pain, then that's your meditation object. You're meditating. Well done. I meditated for a while, a whole half hour. It hurt like hell, but I was one-pointed. I never wandered away from the pain. Now this is serious now. One of my most useful stories, which I got from a book which I read when I was a student, was The Emperor's Three Questions. It's in the first book I've been taught at home. It's a great story, very powerful. Emperor wanted to find his own religion. So I decided he only needs three questions, he answers the three questions. Have everything you need to know in philosophy and spirituality. And he repeats as well. So those three questions were, when is the most important time? Who is the most important person? And what is the most important thing to do? Emperor's three questions. And that's been so amazingly powerful. I mean, I used that, or other people got it from me, used them in all sorts of areas of life. In particular, one thing which comes to mind, in Cathay Pacific, the Hong Kong Airline. They use that in their training, in their HR department, do courses on Emperor's Three Questions. So all of the staff who may serve you if you fly Cathay Pacific, they will know that story. And when they come up to you to serve you, they've been trained that you, the customer, is the most important one. Because you're right in front of them. So if their hospitality is really good, that's where it comes from. So, please, I mean, what about your airline? MH. It's going through a hard time. So get some people to do the Emperor's Three Questions and get up to speed with Cathay Pacific. Anyway, that is a very famous story. When is the most important time is now? Who is the most important person in my spirit in front of you? What's the most important thing to do is to get? Now, meditation. When is the most important time? So when's the best time to meditate? When's the worst time to meditate? Later on. That's so obvious. The only time you ever had is now. What is the most important meditation object? Whatever is right in front of your mind right now, whatever that is the most important meditation object in the whole world. If it's pain, that's your meditation object. If it's dullness, dullness is your meditation object. If it's restlessness, restlessness is the most important meditation object in the whole world. Whatever's here right now, give it importance. Otherwise, you lose mindfulness. If I'm watching something, I cough, if I don't give that importance, I try and get rid of it, I'm not being aware of it. I'm pushing it away to go somewhere else. So, whatever is in the front of your mind right now is the most important meditation object in the whole world. Now, what do we do with it? We care for it. You heard me say about that doctor. Tell that doctor, your job is not to cure your patients. Your main priority is to care for them. If they get better, wonderful. But that's not your first priority. Your first priority is to care. The people who come into your hospital, care for them first. You can always do that. You can always care, but you can't always cure. So you've got restlessness. You can't always cure your restlessness. If you think you're going to do that, you get frustrated many times. You can't always care for your restlessness. Then you always know how to succeed. You can't always cure your stupid mind. You can care. Oh, mind, stupid. Yeah, have a look. You know, I've got many lifetimes yet to become enlightened. And take it easy, mind. It's okay. You care for your mind. Or whatever object is right in front of your mind right now. Don't try and cure it. That is a big problem. Curing is negativity. Deal with it. Trying to get better. Trying to get to a better place. Instead of caring for what's right in front of you right now. And so you have a pain, a body. Don't try and cure it. Get rid of it. That makes it worse. You get more tense, frustrated. You have a pain in the body, an ache in your leg, whatever it is. Care for it. Itchy throat. Ah, poor throat. Does that make you talk too much? I'm terribly sorry. But look, in a few days I can go somewhere else and give you a nice rest. You don't have to talk. Poor throat. But thank you so much for really trying hard to teach the dog for everybody. Throat, thank you so much. So I care for my throat. And I try and cure it. It's not that painful, that not difficult. See? Easier. If I try and get rid of it, I've got to stab you out, I've got to be cough-free, if I try and do that, I get so tense and so upset, I don't have any happiness at all. So, I care for whatever is in front of my mind right now. That means you can always meditate. Because you can always be in the present moment. You can always give importance to what's right in front of you. And you can always care for it. That is the most simple and powerful meditation technique I've ever heard. Now that really gets you into deep meditations easily. You don't have to worry about what's in front of your mind. I've got to get the limiters still. No. Whatever's in front of your mind is important. Careful. Then the limiters will come by themselves. Inevitably. Now, the most important time. Whatever is in front of you, your eyes closed, whatever you're aware of, that is really important. Be careful. It's a simple little power. The Ajahn, what is jhana? What are the four stages of jhana? How does one know if one has attained jhana? Thank you. If you attain jhana, there's no way you can ask a question about that. You can't even put the pen to the paper, which is too much now. Oh, so beautiful, so wonderful. You just go to the toilet, fragrant. Whatever it is, you look at the beautiful sky, and the birds, and the mosquitoes, and the dengue fever. Oh, so wonderful. Everything is just so blissful. So, if you are the nearest I can, the nearest I can describe is when a person's in love. And they come home, the little daughter comes home, Mummy, I met this amazing girl, I'm in love! So anyhow, that's like in jhana, but you know, multiply that by 10. What is the jhana? That is where your five senses have stopped. You can't hear, you can't see, you can't feel the body anymore. So your mind is totally separated from your body. It's not floating in the air in space. It's in its own realm. So somebody shouts at you, "Hey! Time to go! There's a fire!" You can't hear a thing. They pick you up, take you outside, to escape from the fire. You don't feel anything. So in jhanas, you can't feel anything in the bodies. And just in case, because people get, I can't feel the body. What happens if there really is a fire? When I get burnt, I can't protect myself. And the answer is, you can't. In the Samyutta Nikaya, this is in the Majjhima Nikaya, I forget where it is now, find it for you if you really want to see it for yourself. There was a monk meditating in the jungle, in jhanas. And I think he stopped. That is the two villagers collecting vegetables or mushrooms or something. A pocket fox. They don't think the time would be fox. And they saw this monk, the venerable, sitting perfectly still, not moving. Oh my goodness, the venerable is dead. He's died. What do we do? We're Buddhists. So, you know, they were Buddhists, were a bit stupid. So they thought, well, I'm cremated. We're in the forest, lots of wood around. 来到他这个 ceremony, just pick up some wood, find some power now, put the mark on top. That's it. They just do some charts, I didn't know whether it's right charts or not, but they did some charts, that's what I'm supposed to do for the funeral. And the fire nicely established, they went off because they were busy, got stuff to do. So they cremated them right there. Done. The fire point. Those villagers were really impressed when they saw the venerable and so much walking for hours in the village. Not dead, not burnt, and even his robe was totally intact. Nothing was charred. Because when you get into charred, you are invulnerable. So I know that this one lady was asking me, what today? What if I get into jhanas at home? Will my grandma cremate me? You don't have to worry about that. Even if they do put you in a coffin, and they take you to the funeral home, they do all the chanting, and they take you to the crematorium, they put you in a box, and they light it. After the fire has gone out, when that gentleman who looks after it goes to collect the ashes, they open the oven door. Hi! You won't get burnt. So you will survive. You won't die. The guy who works in the funeral body. That's what happens. The last is a great, so it's totally separated from your body, impossible. Actually, the body is actually quite sick. So, what happens? Now then, deep stages of letting go. You don't maintain these things. This is where things vanish and disappear. So, number one is you can't, whole body's gone, no thank you. Which is perfectly still. Huge amounts of bliss. And, mostly the first jhana, the second jhana, definitely, your will has gone. Consciousness. That thing of choice. Really. That's why it's totally still. Really peaceful. You think you've been still before? No. This is real space. Wow. That's what we got. Anyway, this doesn't make any sense to you, but one day you get this, oh, that's what it means. Is there a way to learn Buddhism systematically? If your mind was systematic, then fine. But your mind is all over the place. That's why I teach all over the place. Just do you. And, meditation can boost deja vu, isn't it? There is any relationship within deja vu? A lot of deja vu is not really deja vu. It feels like it. And you think it is, but it's just a closer trick of the brain. You see something, and you think you've seen it before. So it's like retrospect, but you're seeing it for what you think is the second time, and you say, oh, I saw it before. You don't really know. It's mostly a trick of the brain. Da da da. Is nimitta necessary? Yeah. But how is skip nimitta go straight to jhana? Oh, come on. More shortcuts. It is possible, but not advisable. Yeah, you can do it. It's not advisable. It's actually, it is possible to go back to Kuala Lumpur without getting in the bus or a car or a taxi. It's possible to walk. But I don't advise it. You can do that. Yes, it's possible, but how many are you going to walk back home after some pilgrimages? Stupid. It's a beautiful vehicle, the bus coming to collect you, or get a taxi, or get a nice car. So why do you want to walk when you've got all these other vehicles available? Why do you want to sort of skip the limiters when the limiters are there to drive you first class in the jungle? This morning you mentioned about stage 9 of Anapanasati. What about stages 1 to 8?
Yes. What about Agent of Mother's Avengers? Right, that's in the view of paying attention. But this is what I was focusing on. But stage is 1, 2, 3, 4. That is when stage 1 and 2, just alternate. You don't have to do stage 1 or stage 2. You do stage 2, not stage 1, or stage 1, not stage 2. That is just when you're watching the back, just to give it something to make it interesting. You say, is it long, is it short? The alternative which I taught this morning is breathing in peace. On something without the camera. You add a little something to it to make it easier to watch. Then you can count about breathing in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then, oh, it's the end. Now it says 5, 6, 7. You can use Buddha, breathing in, breathing out. What I tried in Australia, breathing in, shut, breathing out, up. But this is the stages 1 and 2, Baba Panasati, what services? Just not just watching the breath, adding a little something to it to make it easier. And what I found out, mostly I think the ones about breathing in peace, without it going, that seems to work for most people better than anything else. Then, stage 3, is being able to watch the whole breath. I mentioned that in the beginning, the in-breath, at the very end, not missing. And then just calming that place down, because you're not, you don't do this, it just happens. You don't go from stage 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, you're just meditating and see these stages happen by themselves. So this is just landmarks in the past hour across the station. I'm trying to do it, I'm just making peace for you, can't be gentle. It just happens by itself. So the breath starts to calm down. When it calms down, stage 5 and 6, you experience pity and sukha, the joy, the happiness which I was mentioning this morning. The breath is so beautiful, oh, this is nice, this is wonderful. And you experience the two of these things together, just joy. And the joy, because you're just watching the joy, you're not doing anything, and it calms down, you get very peaceful. The breath disappears. That's stage 8. The breath is vanishing, calming down. And then 9, there's an impetus come up, chitta. Now I've already mentioned these things. That is stage 9. I've just mentioned this is stage 9 to show that this is part of Anapanasati. So this is not something which I make up. This is straight down the line, meditation, how it works and what happens. After the yesterday's question about shaking of joysticks. The devotee is the vow while holding the joysticks and not shaken. 3 vows as a mark of respect. Where did the vows come from? One of the reasons is because when you go to the temple, there's usually a feast. People usually eat a lot when they go to the temple. So we've got lots of vows to do exercise in our tummy muscles so we don't put on weight. So that's where the bowing comes from. Body exercise, so you stay fit. Because I'm a senior right now, I don't bow, so that's why. Question. What is right view in Buddhism? Right view is my view. Everyone else's view is wrong view. Isn't that true? Your view. How many people have got wrong view? Here, we have enough. Even Socrates, he saw this. When I figured this out, I was actually quite pleased when I saw Socrates. So, it's impossible for you to think you're wrong. You cannot think you are wrong. You can only think you were wrong. And you're right about that. And if you actually examine that, wow, that explains a lot. You cannot think, it's impossible to think what I'm thinking now is wrong. Because you were wrong, yes, but not that you are. So that's why everyone's got right view in their view.
That's why I'm telling the arguments, isn't it? The real life during Buddhism only comes from stillness. How do you know that your view is right and your view is wrong? Because you have to eliminate the things which distort you. What bends your view? It's seeing or hearing or feeling or knowing what you want to see. And in denial of what you don't want to see. And the best example of that is romance. When young people go out at night time, where they fall in love, where do they go? They go to a walk under the moonlight. And tonight is the full moon. Tonight is romantic. I'm messing with that. He's the most unromantic one you can possibly imagine. So you go for a walk under the moonlight, or even better, a candlelit dinner. Do you have a candlelit dinner with the person you're going out with, the 24 and nothing? Oh! So a nightclub or something. All the places where young people go out and fall in love all have one thing in common. They're all dark. Yes. Because it's that dark, you look at that boy, and he really does look like Brad Pitt. He really does look as strong as Arnie Schwarzenegger. And that woman right in front of you, wow, man, she's just the same as Taylor Swift. Angelina Jolie right in front of you, that's what she looks like. Because in the darkness, your fantasies, your wishful thinking can do whatever it wants. So you don't see what really is in front of you. You see what you want to see. That's why no one ever falls in love in the middle of the day in the bright sunshine. It does not happen. So, you go out in the dark, fall in love. No. Not if you got in, but 10, 20 years later, you can't stand the person you're loving. So how come I marry, what did I, why did I marry that for? And because you're upset to your partner, you're blind to her good qualities, and her amazing, wonderful qualities. All the reason why you fell in love and married that person, you can't see anymore. All you can see is her bad qualities. And that's why you tell the lawyer. Or the divorce. The same person, they haven't changed. It's only now you are in denial to their beautiful good qualities. You just cannot see them. So which is right, which is true? You see how your view is always affected by these two major things, desire and ill will. Which is why in Satipatthana, those two hindrances, the ones which need to be suppressed, if you can get any insight at all. So you don't see what you don't want to see. You don't see what you want to see. All those wants and not wants, you just push them aside, suppress them, so you see what's there. And that's how you get right here. Do animals meditate? That's a really nice question. Those birds do. They've been in Java ever since the tree started. Do birds meditate? Cats meditate? I'm just thinking, I'm trying to think of some real stories. It's never underestimated some of these animals, because you may have had experiences with animals doing amazing things. The one which I remember is that one of the cats we had at our monastery. Now some of you have visited where I live, and so you can appreciate that what amazing thing it was. Floating down the monastery where I live is about 60 kilometres south of Perth in the forest. Now there was a feral cat which was found in a lot as a kid. So it's just a baby cat.
very nice, though. And we took it in, and it became like a pet. It was very, very nice. But then he started catching too many birds in the forest. So we thought, no, it's not really the right place for a cat to be in a forest when there's so many birds. So we decided to find a home for it in the city, 60 kilometres to the north. We found a nice home, even a little bit further, by the oceanside suburb of Waterman. It's about 70 kilometres north by the beach. So, the woman agreed to take the cat, and I caught the cat. Now I felt pretty guilty about that, because, you know, as it was my cat, you know, sort of I was nice to it, and I grabbed it and put it in the sack to send it away. Really, I felt nasty to do things like that. It trusted me, and I sort of deceived it. So anyway, put it in a bag, put the bag in the back seat of a car where your feet go, so it can't see through the window. And took it into this an hour and a quarter's drive, and she took it out of the bag, into our house, and kept it in the house for 3 days. To acclimatise it to its new home. She's a very nice, good girl, so I knew the cat would be really, really well looked after. But, after 3 days, she let it out into the garden for the first time, and that cat ran like Usain Bolt to the gate, under the gate, down the street, and this woman could not keep up with it. So I got in her car, and then went around the suburbs looking for the cat. A ton of waste of time, the cat had gone. So, maybe about 2 hours later, she called me because I was on duty at our city centre. We've got a monastery to the south of Perth, and just about 5 kilometres to the north of Perth is our city centre, our temple. And she said, "I'm terribly sorry, I said, I've lost your cat. Tell me exactly what happened." And I said, "Don't worry, the cat's here with me." That cat had ran from her house, which was, I think, about 10 kilometres, and had found me in the city of Perth. He'd never been in that city, in the metropolitan area, ever in his life. He stuck to the city, didn't know anything. It had no GPS, it didn't have a smartphone, it couldn't ring up or ask the police, and where's that job from? And it found me within 2 hours. Which was incredible. How it could find me in a city of a million people, I've never been back to me now. How it could find me? Many people go, "Oh yeah, found the monastery, let's go up." That is sort of understandable. How it could find one person in the midst of over a million in 2 hours? That was amazing. So, when I found it, I was just right next to the wooden door of our temple, and I heard something in the air. I couldn't believe it was a kick with a cat. That was amazing. So, once it did that, I'm sorry, Burns, you have to take your chances. That cat belongs in the monastery. So, psychic, supernatural, I can't explain that. But animals, very, very powerful. So if anything can be, it's an awesome cat. Dogs, that's amazing. That's a great question. Thank you, VVVV, much for the guided meditation. Much before interview I knocked and slept 17 times. After interview I knocked and slept 0 times. No need to help me anymore. Oh, that's why, just waking up doing meditation. So, before I had that problem, now I don't have it anymore. Thank you. I am not a satisfied customer. I always wonder, what is my life purpose? Your life purpose is to serve the BGM. Now at last, you found your life purpose. Sometimes I wonder what my life purpose was. And I found it when I was in Indonesia recently. My life's purpose is having my photograph taken and signing papers. And It's the purpose of my life. Because I was getting fed up. You know, signing books and signing for cameras, for a couple of hours, a whole big line of people, a lot of signing. In a bit, I got fed up. So what am I doing this for? No, this is the purpose of my life. And as soon as I realized that, this happened. I achieved my purpose in life. To smile and sign books. I'm in my 40s, single. You're so lucky being single. Wow. How did you escape? Fortunate. Single and with a stable job, but I still feel something lacking in my life, and I'm not sure if I'm wasting my life. Can you please kindly advise me? Look, it's also important to do service. So it's for the BTF or for old people's heart or something, because when you sort of just give to others, you think you're giving to others, you get so much back. Meaning, you're part of the society. You're serving, you're giving. That's the meaning of life, it's a gift. In whichever way you can. I give by just talking a lot, smiling, signing. And do I enjoy it? You bet. As emperor, you've mentioned that our obsession with thinking is often conditioned by education and culture. If I'm in a profession which requires a lot of thinking, work, eating, research, why do you assume that the research requires a lot of thinking? Actually, it's the opposite. If you really want to innovate, if you want to see things which other companies haven't seen, shut up, be still. Because all of your thoughts are just old ways of looking. It's old stuff, it's not new. But if you're still here, you are the expression of this. I think I can say that in Buddhism I have benefited in many ways. Things like kindfulness. Things like sadhu, 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 which actually create happiness and get more people coming to the temple. So I think it's fair to say that I'm an innovator but still keep to the core tradition of Buddhism. The Dhamma is still exactly, that's what I can quote. It's a quote that, but the way it's presented, I have innovated. So I am an innovator. Where did that come from? Not in thinking. I don't have to sit down and say, how can I get people to wake up in the morning? Ah, yeah, think. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It doesn't come from thinking, it comes from silence. Because when you're silent and peaceful, you're listening to life, you listen to other people, you connect. Let my life and find out what's needed. You can do it. That's one of the reasons why I went 2 years ago. I went to Daejeon in South Korea to give the keynote address, the opening speech to the 2015 World Computer Congress. Cutting edge innovators, moving high tech to the next level. And they asked me to give the opening speech. And people said, what are the Buddhist monk doing teaching us innovators? And afterwards they went, wow, what a great choice. They learned new stuff because they came from a new person. If it was another guru, you know, from high tech, Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg, they just hear what they already knew. But I was coming at it from a totally different angle that allowed innovation to happen. That's how innovation happens. Not through thinking, but actually not thinking at all. Our innovation requires a lot of thinking. Well, quitting my job, and switching to a less thinking oriented profession, duty of farmer. Farmers think a lot, they worry about the rain and the pests, etc. Increasing my chances of success in meditation? No! You meditate and you be an innovator and it's amazing just what you come up with. I always like to mention this scientist, Brian Josephson, who was working in solid-state physics. He got his degree, but was doing postgraduate research, and got his PhD in, and he published his paper, which would eventually give him his Nobel Prize for physics. He's a Nobel laureate. And where did he get that idea from? Meditating. He wasn't Buddhist, he was a TM meditator. But still, he got it through stillness. Many people get their breakthroughs, but they're not thinking about it. It's easy, it's a totally different way. That is where innovation comes. So, whoever wrote this, you keep up with your work in research, and you do more meditation, a lot more, less thinking, be more intuitive, and less just repeating all other people's stuff. And you will rise on top of your profession. Just like I am. Now what would I add to that? This morning you were talking about, I think I heard it, limited, but when I asked my friend, it was limited. I heard it, limited. It was limited. Could you please explain what limited is? Not limited. Limited. Limited is a light you see in your mind, and it is your eyes closed, the beautiful light appears in your mind's vision. But it's real. It's a sign of your sixth sense, the jitter, is the way you see it. If you haven't understood it, I can hold almost whole talk this morning. If you still don't understand it, please get my book, Mindfulness Bliss and Beyond, or otherwise known as Happiness Through Meditation. And there's whole chapters on meditation. And there you can find out everything you ever need to know about meditation. Why don't you encourage us to live a monastic life? Because if you were all monks and nuns, we'd know we'd have to feed me. Who will give donations to support the monastery? So I don't want too much competition. Of course, I do it more competition. No, I do encourage you to live a monastic life, but for the right reasons. You get to a certain stage, you just really want to let go, live a more simple life. And this is a wonderful way of doing it. But it's also, it's incredibly difficult to make monasteries. Now, I always thought Australia had lots of land, but gee, every year the local government gets more hurdles to jump over, higher and higher hurdles before you can be able to build a hut in the forest. Now it's because of bushfires. Because last year in Western Australia there was really big bushfires, people lost their houses and their lives, and so they put these really tough rules. And we just can't find a way around them. So we've got funds to build more cooties, but we just can't get permission to do so. There's too many regulations. So it's really nasty, but anyway, we'll find it. One day. Okay. So it's hard to build monasteries. Try to build one in Malaysia, couple of problems. Singapore, not enough land. Actually, there is enough land. How many golf courses have you got in Singapore? You don't need all those golf courses. So if you're going to make a forest monastery, the golf course people love your forest monastery. So, anyone in the government, just don't have one of the golf courses to be the forest monastery. Is it possible we get a glimpse of our past life through meditation? Of course it is. So, way to do it. Very simple. If you get to the stage of mimetus, then that's usually powerful enough. Beautiful mimetus, really peaceful, very happy. I don't mean just that, beginning mimetus, I mean the little juicy big ones. Or jhanas is even more easy. Once you come out of your meditation, and it's beginning to sort of fade away, coming back to normal again, well, you've still got energy and power, no hindrances at all. Tell yourself, what is my earnest memory? Ask that question, what is my earnest memory? And if your mind is ready, a memory will come up And I don't know why it is, it's usually you start off with an early time on the side. Then you're okay. Early at least. In the vast room. Very common. Early at least. Fast life. And then if you do get a fast life, it's not like you're remembering that you remember what you had for lunch today. It's like you're back there eating lunch. It's like you're living it, it's like you're back in the past. But it really is a past life memory. You're back there. You can feel the clothes that you wore at that time on your body. You can feel the cold on the heat. And the thing also to remember is that, for goodness sake, ask yourself the questions. When is this? What's my name? Get some details. Because your past life is usually not that long ago. Which means that there were records. And it's wonderful to go into those libraries and check those records. You go back into the past and what's my name? And it's Humphrey. Where did I live? And you get the address. You go back into the records, see those through. And you find it there. That's freaky. You know, you've got that in meditation, but it's true, it's real. And that shows you how we can find that possible. In Buddhism, if there is no soul, how do you get people? You don't get people. Your stream of consciousness gets reborn. That is the difference between a thing getting reborn and nothing being there. Halfway between existence and non-existence is this process. Otherwise known as dependent origination. It's a process. Example. Mangoes. So you eat the mango today, quite when you get home. And after you make the mango, you plant the seed in your garden. And a couple of years later, and more than that, sorry, about 5-10 years later, 20, then you have a new mango tree which gives its first mangoes, and you eat them. What was the connection between the new mango and the old mango you ate 5 or 10 years ago? What's the connection? Is it the same? Well, there's not even any atoms from the old mango and the new mango. Is there a connection there? There's a process. And you can check every moment, every little connection in that chain of causation. The seed, you can see the seed by going in the ground. And you can see it developing until it splits and a tiny green shoot comes out. And it grows just continuously until it pushes through the soil. It looks like a piece of grass at first, but it grows a little wooden stem. And it grows into a sapling. And the sapling gets fatter and bigger, throws out branches. Those branches give sub-branches. As trees start to form, leaves come. And then after a few years, at the end of the leaves, you see the little flowers start to sprout forth. And those flowers, then they start to swell at their base. It gets fatter and fatter. The mango is forming. You see the mango go bigger, 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 bigger. And then you eat it. Nothing goes across from the first mango to the other. There's no mango soul. But there's a connection. It's called the stream. What become the stream of consciousness. That is how you can't say there's no rebirth. You can't say that something is reborn. It's a process continues on. The Ajahn, why monks do cross-legged meditation instead of sitting on a chair, which is more comfortable? It depends on the monk. Some monks like sitting on a chair, like Ajahn Sujata especially. He's got really bad knees, so he always meditates on a chair. I am more comfortable on the floor than on a chair. Because the first 8 years of life as a monk, there were no chairs. There was 8 years after becoming a monk, I sat in my first chair. Which was on an aircraft going from Bangkok to London. That hurt like hell. I could sit so comfortably across the leg, but on a chair, my body was not used to that at all. It really aches. This is why I ask some people, can I sit in the office? No, on the chair. And you know, if people did sit on the ground, imagine, try this, tell us about MH. If they get people sitting cross-legged on the ground, they can get two layers of people in an ordinary aircraft, which means you get twice as many people. Yeah, you should try that. There's a lot of space wasted under your bum. If you can actually sit down on another platform above you, twice as many people can get in the aircraft, which means profits will go up. This is called innovation, because I'm very peaceful, I get all these amazing ideas. Sometimes you may laugh, but one of these days someone can think of that. So that's why some maps sit on chairs, some maps sit on the ground. Again, gambling under which precepts? A precept against stupidity. Taking what's not given. Is it given? But it is certainly stupidity, because anyone who's a mathematician, anyone who's sensible, if you go up to that casino, it's very plush. Where do they get all the money to pay for such beautiful buildings? I can't build a monastery like that. I don't get that sort of money through donations. They only get it through stupid people thinking they can win. And of course they don't win. They always lose. That is why they can pay for such amazing facilities. And they employ so many people. And they have food which is very cheap. Simply because people think they can win. So sometimes people, they want to try and beat the odds. So one way of beating the odds is to go play at the temple. This happened once. This fellow played in the temple and he heard the voice. Go to the casino. And the man said, what's that? Go to the ancient casino now. It was a spirit that was just helping him out. Well, that's some very kind spirits. But maybe you hear a spirit, don't run away. They can help you out. They know lottery numbers. Ghosts are very good with lottery numbers. So if ever a ghost comes to your room, say lottery number first, and then run away. So, they went to the casino. So he went to the casino. And as he arrived at the lobby, he heard the voice a second time. Go to the roulette table. Very clear. So he went to the roulette table, sat down, and he heard the voice again. Put 100 ringgit on number 6. Why not? So he put 100 ringgit chip on number 6, and the croupier put the ball in, went round and round and round, and landed on number 6. He heard the spirit say, "Woohoo!" And then the spirit said, put all the winnings on number 27. So he put all the money on number 27. The criminal put the ball in, spun the wheel, and it fell on number 27. And he could hear the spirit going, "Yeah, yeah!" Really excited. And then the spirit came down and said, put everything on number 18. Everything. And that was big money. And everybody stopped and looked at this guy, betting everything on one number. This was exciting. And the group had put the ball in, spun it around, and the ball landed on 18. And then jumped out into the next number. And very, very clearly the man heard the ghost say, "Oh shit." Even ghosts make mistakes. Don't gamble for goodness sake. It's actually not really nice of my piece, it was pretty stupid. Adam, I think this, why are we born? It is to serve the BGM. Why are we born? Because you wanted to. You wanted to get reborn, so here you are. Not to blame, not blame anybody else. How to improve sati? Thanks, Ajahn. Be more still. Can you say more? Fear your emptiness. That's one of my other people ask, how do you address the very seeming mind? Ajahn Brahm, his holiness, his emptiness, which is getting much better. That's the name afterwards. The title is Hachar, Ajahn Brahm, or Ajahn Brahm. Hachar stands for his roundness. So my full title is His Roundness, Ajahn Brahm, or the nickname is Ajahn Donut. The reason donut is because I'm round, sweet, and holy. So my title is His Roundness, Ajahn Donut. Why do people sleep talk? Sure, punchy air angry when they sleep. How can they be helped? What do you want to help them for? They're having a good time. They must have these amazing dreams. They're probably the world champion heavyweight bout. They're punching the air or they've just scored a goal for Malaysia in the World Cup soccer. They won, yes. But they just got in line, they punch the air. Yes, I'm enlightened. Who knows? They sleep talk. So, and I tell people, don't tell people who are sleep talking, what you need to do is to say, go to bed, tuck yourself into bed, and I will sleep peacefully without talking. Tell your mind what to do. It's called programming your mind. Auto-suggestion, self-hypnosis, conditioning in Buddhism. It works. Give yourself the right words and the sleep talking fixes. Dear Ajahn Brahm, is it a good thing to release energy in the midst of meditation? Why does it do so? What do you mean release energy? Is it release wind? What type of energy are you talking about? And I go outside with this energy. No, sometimes you'll think you've got too much energy. You know, it's let the energy become very powerful, very peaceful, and send it up into the mind. How can Buddhism help deter terrorism? By recognizing there's no such thing as a terrorist in this world. There is a person who commits terrorist acts, but not a terrorist. It's much more ordinary than that. And it doesn't matter, terrorism is part of life. We deter it, we accept it as part of life. As I said many, many years ago, if I'm in an aircraft with a terrorist and they blow up the aircraft at 30,000 feet, am I sad? Am I upset? No, because of the three benefits of dying at 30,000 feet in terrorist explosion. You must remember those. The three advantages of dying in an aircraft explosion. Number one, instant cremation. You don't have to bother getting a venerable, getting the sleepaway to do all the chanting, and arranging just a funeral parlor, and feeding all these friends and relations, most of which you don't know, for 3 or 4 days in the service. You don't have to do any of that. It's all done on the spot. Really efficient. So grandma is up in the air, boom, and not only is she cremated on the spot, her ashes are sprinkled over everything. That costs a lot of money to do that. This is the second apartment. How much do funerals cost in KL? It's always your family. You think, this is my father, I have to do the best for him. I've only got one father, so you spend so much money. Aircraft explosion. You spend absolutely nothing and you get money back from insurance, from the aircraft company. That's the second advantage. First advantage, is no important funeral, all done. The second is no money, have to pay out, you actually get money back. And the third advantage is the best. If you die at 30,000 feet, you are so close to heaven, it's easier to go the rest of the way. So thank you, the terrorists, for letting us go to heaven easy. Just to follow up on the question of the conversation we would have had with Brahma, as Brahma believes he is the creator of the universe under the influence of Mara, somewhere I heard in one conversation, also found some ancient text from another religion. They call it Brahma Sahampati. Mahabrahma is some other character. Brahma Sahampati was an anagami. He was not a god, but he was the creator of the universe. That was Brahma Sahampati. And it is true in the Gnostic Gospels of Christianity. Beginning early Christianity, there were three strands of Christianity competing for who would actually survive and dominate the others. There was a church at Jerusalem, which was just the sect of Judaism. And that was wiped out in 70 AD when the Romans were fed up with the Jewish people in that state and destroyed the temple in 70 AD. With that, Jewish Christianity was wiped out, which left the Gnostic Christians and the other Christians said to be in Rome. The Christians said to be in Rome were organized, the Gnostics were just totally devolved democracy, and so the organized Christian church in Rome eventually dominated, and that was Roman Christianity. What we have today eventually split up into the eastern part, the Greek Orthodox, Coptics and stuff like that. And that's where it all came from. And they totally annihilated all the Gnostics. Burned all their books. Destroyed all evidence of the Gnostics. So they thought. But you can't destroy stuff. Always something turns up. What turned up in the village of Nankhamadi in southern Egypt, archaeologists saw this farmer lighting a fire with his ancient papyrus scrolls. It was mortifying. These were ancient. So he offered some money to buy the stuff that he was lighting the fire with. Found out he had many more of these ancient scrolls. This became known as the Nankhamadi Library, Ancient Sayings of Jesus, recorded in papyrus such a long time ago. In one of those, the Gospel of Thomas the Contender, there it says, it's been translated, the leader of the translating team was a Professor Elaine Pagels, P-A-G-E-L-S. And in one of those which I read, it was God in his heaven saying, I am the creator, the best, the first. And then he hears somebody say, no, you're not. There are people in the universe which you don't even know about. So similar to Buddhism. That's the Gnostic Gospels, which was only just maybe 100 AD or something. Very, very early form of Christianity. Very good. In there also, Jesus is quoted to have said, he who knows themselves knows the truth of all things. That's good stuff. So this gives a totally different angle on early Christianity, which was to suggest. But on top of it. So that's actually where that quote comes from in the Gnostic Gospels. Does metta meditation help in the practice of insight meditation? You cannot do insight without metta, nor without samatha. Sam, Pai, and metta the dog have to go up together at the mountain. It can't leave metta back in the house. So samatha, vipassana, metta, all part of the same practice. They have to go together. That's not great. I'll make the last question. To what level of meditation can we see the past life? I think I already answered that once with another question. The level is dimittas, jhanas, that type of thing. Deep meditation. Is it compulsory for a meditator to reach the jhana level before you can enter realize nirvana? Of course. Is this wisdom equally deeper with the practice of jhana? Thank you. Yes, the wisdom gets deeper and deeper. Verse 372. Is that
that verse which I said earlier about this is the only way, that's verse 274. Say 374. Verse 372. Nati jana kapanyasa panya nati yajaya to yami dana kapanya jasa the way the mother's at the gate. Do you all know what that means? That is one of my favourite sayings of the Buddha. There is no jhana without wisdom. First. Not willpower, not effort, wisdom. It's the understanding of wisdom allows you to let go, enter jhana. So jhana without wisdom. That is jhana apanyasa. Panyanatiyajayasa. There is no wisdom without jhana. Yami jhana chapanyacha. But in the person who has jhana and some wisdom, so way the Bodhisattva came. They are in the presence of Nirvana. That's actually how Nirvana happens. Got the power, the deep power of jhana, and the inside understanding of so far, there's becoming a whoosh. That's when Nirvana happens. You need both. You've got all the wisdom in the world, a great professor, a professor of Buddhism, you know everything, you know Pali backwards, you know than I do. If you're a great meditator, if you get deep meditation, you've got no understanding of Dharma. You don't get mine. Keep the two together. Okay. So yes, you need both to get enlightened. As I will explain again later on when I talk about insight. Real insight. Big insight. Huge insight. Coming soon. Sadhu! There we go. Thank you for laughing. Oh, I can't make progress. There's still lots of questions just here. I've got a bit of a model. So please, if you've got a lot more questions here to answer, if you have a question, only this really important. Your life depends upon it. Yeah. If you don't have this question answered, you won't get enlightened. So please make it only really, really, really important. Okay, that's fine. Otherwise, we'll be able to finish this. Okay, so good night, everybody. See you in the morning. And please have quiet sleep. Keep noble silence even when you're sleeping. If it doesn't work, then please, from the organizer or team manager, get some mask and tape and wrap it around the tonight before they sleep.